It's our final positional preview here on the show, and Charles McDonald joins us to break down the tight ends and the offensive line class in this year's class. Brock Bowers, what a talent. We go deep on his skill set and where he might fit best in the NFL. And hey, offensive linemen don't score you fantasy points, but they absolutely matter. And if you think they don't, you don't know ball. So make sure you listen to this show and figure out the sport here, okay? Come on, let's get serious. The draft is a week away. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, April 18th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is, you know him, you love him, the internet's own, Yahoo's own, Charles McDonald. Charles, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, man. Just finished the last mock drafts of the year. They'll be out Tuesday with me and Nate Tice. Feel, you know, right when I finished the last pick, I was like, oh my God, holy crap. We're almost here.
We're almost here.
I'm ready for the next week to kind of fly by. I always feel like when you get closer to the draft, the days feel a little bit longer. The takes get a little hotter. There's a lot of smoke being thrown around, but we're finally in the final stretch. And, you know, a week from today, in, you know, another 10 days or so, we will have a full new crop of rookies in the NFL. Lots to talk about. But for now, we are still doing one more week of projection.
That's right. You're right that, like, the takes do seem to get hotter, and like sometimes it's nonsense takes like right before the draft. But did you see that? Well, number one, Bill Belichick is going to be doing a live draft show with Pat McAfee, which is not something I would have had on my bingo card 365 days ago, but here we are. He said that, like, because, you know, Daniel Jeremiah made this point on our mock draft Monday show this week, that people keep saying, like, oh yeah, Washington's locked in at Jaden Daniels or taking Jaden Daniels. And he's like, I talked to one GM, you know, this week that they don't know. He's not told anybody who they're picking, you know, and like, use your context clues there on who he was talking about, if you really pay attention. But Bill Belichick made the point that, like, teams don't start leaking information until about 12 hours before the draft, really. Like, I think that was what Bill Belichick said, or like really 24 hours before then. So it's kind of one of those things where I feel like people start to get their last, like, weirdest hot takes out this next week until like 24 hours before the draft, when like real leaks seem to start happening. Yeah, you know, I think of like Trey Lance or Baker Mayfield, like those picks started to leak, I feel like, 24 hours before the draft.
This game is so stupid. Like, yeah. This part of the draft cycle is infuriating to me, especially in the context of the Commanders pick. Like, we all know Caleb Williams is going number one. We've known that since like February. And now, like, there's if the Commanders are dead set on taking a quarterback at number two, you know you're not getting Caleb. So you're going to pick one of the other ones. What do you need to hide it for? No one cares. Like, there's no real surprise here unless they decide to trade out, which would be a pretty big surprise at number two. But, you know, you already know who you're going to take, I would hope, at this point, considering you already know what your options are and who's available. Like, this whole kind of charade game, when you know that where you're picking is going to be set in stone, the position you're going to be picking is set in stone. This part of the calendar is really frustrating to me, because I think it's weird the way that teams try to hide stuff that is almost relatively obvious to anyone who's paying attention. They're going to take a quarterback. Just leak it. It's fine. No one's going to get hurt. People are still going to be excited draft day.
Yeah, I feel like the Jets with Zach Wilson, like, kind of let that leak a little bit. Like, yeah, we're taking Zach Wilson. That ended up obviously not working out with Zach Wilson, but it didn't lead to any sort of, like, less suspense on draft day, which I know the NFL is obsessed about. That's really what it is that the league office is obsessed with the draft being as, like, you know, climactic as possible, right? Like, they want that big moment, especially early on with the first two picks, although everybody knows who's going number one usually. But yeah, the Belichick thing just made me think about that, because he said it was 12 hours. I looked it up, but 12 hours before the draft is when teams start leaking stuff. So most of this is, to his point, was like, most of this is just agent BS, which I feel like agents have gotten more power over the media in the last few years. Like every time every time a signing happens now, we're like, deal done by X and X agency. And like, full disclosure, I don't have an agent. I'm not represented. So I got no attachment to agents or whatever. I don't talk to any agents. I mean, like, agents, you want to talk to me? Sure, I guess. I'm not opposed to it. But it's just, to me, I feel like that ends up gearing these weird conversations that we have. And that just... it shows that there's these layers of agendas behind it that, to your point, creates like the most nauseating part of the draft cycle.
Yep, but we're almost done.
We're almost done.
We are 1 week left. 7 days. I hope I can make it the next 7 days. I'm not sure, but I'm going to do my best.
Well, I'm sure you'll make it, you know, because you'll be fine, buddy. You've got a well-adjusted head on your shoulders, some would say, about how to handle this stuff. I know for me, I'm just gonna try to chart as much wide receiver film as I can before the draft is, hopefully be as prepared as possible. But we are not talking wide receivers today. We got that position done the last two episodes. Today we finish our prospect preview series by looking at the tight end position and the offensive line prospects that are gonna go high in this year's draft. Let's start with tight ends, Charles. And let me tell you what, man, last year we had a pretty full class to talk about. I mean, you and I were breaking down like Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. I mean, ironically, both guys went to the same team. We had a lot of players to talk about. We don't have very many players to talk about seemingly in this year's draft class, but we do have one big main attraction, and that is Brock Bowers of your Georgia Bulldogs. I feel like, Charles, we could just end up doing 30 minutes of the show on him. I am really curious from your perspective, just what makes him such a special prospect, a guy that, you know, is going in the top 10 or at least top 15 of most mocks right now. But before you give me that answer, I do just want to share this stat with the people out there, just to put into context how good of a player Brock Bowers has been in college. As a true freshman in 2021, Brock Bowers had 882 yards for the Georgia Bulldogs. Very good team, if you remember. 882 yards. Team high.
Oh yeah, I remember.
No one. I know you remember. No one else on the team had more than 500 yards. And here are some of the other players on that team: Jermaine Burton, Ladd McConkey, Adonai Mitchell, James Cook, Darnell Washington, and George Pickens, who only played in four games. He's come back from injury, but still, that's a lot of players that are going to get very highly drafted in this year's draft. And, you know, two guys that went on day two a couple of years ago in James Cook and Darnell Washington. So that just puts in context how good of a player Brock Bowers has been. But again, Charles, as a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs, somebody who's watched Brock Bowers' whole career, what makes him such a special prospect at the, quote, tight end position?
I mean, to me, he's one of those guys where it's just kind of readily apparent if you've watched it. And I think the context of all of those other players, including James Cook, is pretty relevant in terms of, like, projecting, or really not even projecting, just analyzing how much the Georgia staff thought of Bowers as a talent. Because, you know, he was stealing carries from running backs.
Yeah.
You know, they used him as a player on jet sweeps, and he's got a couple of plays where, you know, he's taking it 70, 80 yards. And, you know, some of those carries are against, like, lower level competition. But still, you know, you're talking about a 240-pound guy that has the ability to take a handoff and really get down the field. Or he can play in line. He can play in the slot. He can play outside from time to time. So I think, man, he's just such a special player. And I understand he doesn't fit into the stereotypical, like, what you might think of what a tight end is, right? In terms of the build, in terms of the size, in terms of the blocking ability, but he just does so much else. I just find it hard to think that there are, you know, even like 10 players better than him in this class. I know that might not be a reflection of where he ultimately gets drafted, but I look at this as like a guy who can take your offense to the next level because his receiving ability, it really is that special. You know, it's kind of hard to find any player, not just a tight end, who can take a screen and, you know, break tackles after the catch. You can also get open deep, be a threat over the intermediate part of the field. It's really hard to even just, like, I don't know what I would really be scared of in this game outside of maybe some of the injury history he had over last season. And, you know, if you're looking for a real kick-ass, hard-nosed blocking tight end, this probably isn't for you. But I would say you're kind of missing what makes Brock Bowers such a special prospect if that's the area that you get focused on.
You know what's funny too about that list of the wide receivers up at the top, specifically Jermaine Burton, Ladd McConkey, and Adonai Mitchell. I realize that Burton and Mitchell also transferred, obviously, but like those are the three receivers. Burton's a little weird, bit of a weird case because the red flags off the field character, that type of stuff. But those are the three receivers that typically, when you talk to people that do these like production models, like in the real hardcore like dynasty players that are really into the production and like career long production and stuff, those are kind of the three guys where it's like, yeah, the production resume is not that good, but like the film guys really think the film is good. And that almost is like an even bigger credit to Brock Bowers' game, because like you said, he was just such a volume sponge, just like we're gonna build the whole plane out of Brock Bowers, even though you typically don't see that at the tight end position, to the point that like all of these receivers have like holes in their production resume simply because they spent time playing with Brock Bowers. Again, I realize Jermaine Burton and Adonai Mitchell transferred and went on to, especially Mitchell played with another really good receiver there with, you know, quarterbacks up the, it's not the full picture of why the production profile isn't there, but I just think that's funny because I look at Bowers and I think he is the type of guy that certainly at the collegiate football level, like you can build an entire offense around. But I'm curious for your perspective, what do you think his ideal role in the NFL is? Because I think that's been tough to pin down. And I know for sure, Charles, that people listening to a fantasy show like this, they're going to have the Kyle Pitts, you know, trauma, basically. But I would argue that that's a very different player.
We're coming back on the Kyle Pitts stuff, right? It's new year.
Yeah,
still
I know.
He's still only 23, man. 1,000-yard rookie season. I'm still in on this. I'm still in on this.
Me too. But people have their feelings hurt by the Kyle Pitts stuff. I'm simply speaking to the people.
Oh, I have receipts that I will be unloading because Kyle's got the quarterback again. Last time he had a quarterback, he had one of the best rookie tight end seasons ever. Just saying. But with Brock, you know, I remember when Georgia played Michigan in the playoff game a few years ago when they won their first title, I was watching it with my dad, and Brock Bowers makes, this is when Brock Bowers is a freshman, he makes this crazy catch like on the sideline, back shoulder, and then, you know, runs down the field and gets some yak. And my dad was like, how old is that guy? It was like, he's a freshman. He's like 18 or 19 years old. My dad was like, oh, if that was you, this will be your last college football game. And that's kind of that's how apparent the talent level is. You know, my dad, who's more a casual football watcher now, can see Brock Bowers play one game and say, oh, this is the best player on the field, on a field full of five-star athletes,
yeah.
You know, and a field full with future NFL players. Because, you know, you talk about the skill players, but Georgia's put a bunch of linemen into the NFL over the past few years too. So I'm really bullish on his talent level. I'm really excited to see where he goes. And as far as like a player use comparison, I'm just going to steal from, you know, our colleague Nate Tice, because he works here. So his takes are our takes.
Oh yeah.
oh yeah. He was, you know, we were talking about Brock Bowers in the text chain, and he, when we were doing one of our mock drafts, and we were playing with the idea of having the Rams move up to get Brock Bowers as a long-term Cooper Kupp replacement, someone who can play in the slot, someone who can get open the middle, get those tough yards. And also, if you get the right matchup, can burn you deep. As you know, one of the biggest plays of Cooper Kupp's career is that Bucks playoff game, the year they won the Super Bowl, when he ices the game kind of on that huge, it was like a seam route against cover zero up the middle. Like, those are kind of the same situations in which Brock Bowers can win. So it's not like a clean one-for-one comparison, because obviously Brock is a good deal bigger than Cooper Kupp. But I just think in terms of usage, you're probably looking more at kind of like a slot role than maybe a true inline tight end. But it's fine, because he's shown that he can get open. He's shown that he can run routes. He's shown that he can make plays with the ball in his hands. I think that those are skills that you can use on any offense. I think people who get a little bit scared about, like, oh, where exactly does he fit? You got to open your third eye, man. It's right there. It's right there for you. He's 6'3", 240, and most likely runs a 4.4 when he's healthy.
That Kupp comparison is really interesting, because again, with the Kyle Pitts thing, I believe we had this conversation with Derek Klassen on the show, but it's so different from Pitts because the, you know, he's more than a tight end argument with Kyle Pitts is he can line up and take snaps at X receiver, which is true. He can do that, but still, I think you are have like a bit of diminishing returns there if you're taking a guy who
right.
is a TE and you're playing him out at X receiver. You know, guys like Travis Kelce do it. There's certainly guys in the NFL that do it. And I do think that like Pitts showed you could pull reps from Pitts's rookie season of him doing that and like legit stacking DBs and winning with size and getting separation. But from just like a mismatch perspective, the idea of using a more than a tight end and getting them against linebackers split out from the formation or even just like tight to the formation, but not as the true Y tight end or like the inline tight end. There's so much more potential there for that player. And it's like funny. Again, you bring up the Cooper Kupp comparison because I look back at my historic reception perception data. So all the guys I've charted since 2014 in the NFL, I say this a lot. The weirdest profile that I've ever charted was Rondale Moore, his rookie season, because that was like fake receiver stuff. So if you throw that out, if you throw that profile out, there is no one I've charted since 2014 than Cooper Kupp early in his career who ran against more zone coverage and ran against less like press, the least amount of press coverage. So because he just, even though he was a wide receiver, he wasn't really doing like wide receiver things. Like, I mean, he certainly, especially at that point, there wasn't this like big slot receiver archetype. So it was kind of something that we hadn't really seen before. So, you know, it's kind of tough to say like Brock Bowers, you're going to compare him to a wide receiver that just a couple years ago led the NFL in catches, yards and touchdowns, like had the triple crown. But right. I think like early career Cooper Kupp where, I mean, dude, you go back and watch those like 2017, 2018 Rams offenses, like Cooper Kupp is legit like chipping incoming rushers before just, you know, going out into the flat and catching like wide ass open passes against zone coverage. And that really does map well, I think, for a Brock Bowers type of comparison.
Yeah, it's like we said before, it's not the cleanest one for one comparison. But I also think that that's really difficult to do for a player like Brock Bowers. Cause I remember, you know, during the season, I was trying to think of comparisons and based on like height, weight, speed, plus all the catching ability, run after catch ability. You're talking about like Shannon Sharp. It's like, man, like that's pretty lofty. You know, I don't think that that's probably fair and probably not even fair to compare him to Cooper Kupp based on how good Kupp has been, you know, before he got dinged up with injuries this year. But still, you're talking about a player who's probably going to play a ton in the slot with some inline. You're going to dominate the middle of the field. You're going to be able to make plays after the catch and punish safeties. You know, it's kind of hard not to think of some of the top guys who have been slot receivers, who have been some of these flex tight ends over the past few years and project that onto Brock Bowers. You know, I would be surprised if he gets as many jet sweep handoffs in the NFL that he did at Georgia. But
yeah.
Again, it just goes to show like what kind of a rare talent he is. And maybe you should just put him in the box of characterization as like an offensive weapon. I know I hate it when people do that because usually it means that it's someone who's not all that good at anything. They're just kind of right. good with the ball in their hands. But I, you know, Brock is a really complete player. I would love to see him on the Jets, you know, where you have the established offense, the established offense options on the outside where you have Garrett Wilson, you have Mike Williams, and then you can kind of add Brock as like this third piece to go along with Breece Hall in the backfield. If Aaron Rodgers is healthy, I think that that's a pretty good offense. I do think that Brock is probably a bit of a luxury pick for teams, which might push him down the board a little bit. But still, like, this is a guy I think should have a huge impact from day one, especially assuming, you know, his ankle's fully healthy from the surgery that he had last year.
Another interesting player comparison that I've heard, I think it was EJ Snyder and Brett Coleman from Bootleg Football Podcast. They compared him to like Kyle Juszczyk, right? Like a souped up version of Kyle Juszczyk, right? In some of the ways that San Francisco is able to weaponize him as a receiver. So I know these are kind of like weird player comparisons, but I think that's just to your point. That's sort of the territory we're in with Brock Bowers and just kind of the offensive weapon. Yeah. Not the like Rondale Moore offensive weapon, like fake receiver type gadgety stuff, but a true like mismatch creator at multiple positions. I do want to push back on the Jets thing a little bit, just because I was going to ask you what team in an ideal but realistic world you'd like to see him land on. We're talking about this guy that you know, we can be a mismatch weapon at multiple positions. And like, I do understand if you look at the personnel where Brock Bowers fits, and like, they certainly need another pass catcher there. There's no question about that. You can't just be like, well, we got Mike Williams, now we're all set at pass catcher. Can't do that. Are you not a little concerned that like this guy that we're talking about, a nebulous role, and like, how is he going to be used? Are you not a little concerned that like Nate Hackett's going to be the guy who's got to figure this out?
That's a fair point. Well, if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, it's offensive coordinator Aaron Rodgers. You know, true. That's where they got lost last year, because Nate has to do his job. And Aaron,
yeah, right. That is actually really fair. Although, you know, now we're talking.
Okay,
like,
what if I tell you Brock could be Aaron's next version of Randall Cobb?
Yeah, I mean, that were only, although the only reason Randall Cobb wasn't playing full snaps was probably because Aaron wasn't healthy. Is Randall Cobb on the team? Randall Cobb is not on the team right now, currently.
Oh, God, no. They couldn't pull off that again.
There's got to be right. I do again worry that like we're, because the only thing I would say with Brock Bowers, it just makes me concerned from like year one production standpoint. And like, really, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here, because I love Brock Bowers. I believe, you know, again, our colleague Nate Tice has him as the fourth overall player on his big board. And like, I think that hype is justifiable. But just when we're typically thinking about tight ends, and like, I know that Sam Laporta was the tight end one of fantasy last year. You know, he hit the ground running. A lot of tight ends were very productive last year, sort of kind of pushed that, like, we were having so much conversation last year about rookie tight ends and the concerns about the production and all that stuff. This last year's class kind of pushed that off a little bit, but I do just wonder, because Brock Bowers is going to be a guy that's so really overloaded with information. That's usually how the tight end position happens, right? Is you get thrown into the fire, right? And like, you got to learn NFL blocking schemes and you got to learn NFL route concepts. And like, Brock Bowers might be a guy that you get him to a team and then you've got galaxy brain Nate Hackett about like, oh, I've got to put him in all these different spots and all this stuff. And could he be a little overloaded with information? And then, especially to bring the Aaron Rodgers factor in here, a guy that gets frustrated with rookies and young players and stuff like that. I just see a little bit more toxicity in that potential marriage. And, but I understand your point about personnel wise, where he certainly fits in there.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about like what the good fits are for Bowers, because like I think if you're looking at the top 10, the Jets might be the cleanest spot for him. But also, you know, I don't know if they would do it at 5, but the Chargers kind of make sense. Like, if you're Jim Harbaugh, do you look at Brock Bowers and see Vernon Davis? Because that was,
if you're Greg Roman, do you see Mark Andrews? Like,
right. Those are guys that have had a lot of success with tight ends in their careers. So I really just hope he ends up with a good quarterback early on. Like, him and Marvin are the two guys where I'm like, please let these guys get with the quarterback, because I think that they could potentially go nuclear year one. And I know that tight ends can have, or, you know, the stigma is that tight ends can have a tough start to their rookie year or their NFL careers in general. But, you know, think of some of the guys that have been highly touted recently, like Kyle Pitts, 1K rookie season, Sam Laporta, you know, 900 yards, 10 touchdowns last season. I don't think it's maybe as impossible as it was before, as the game changes, as teams get a little bit more creative and figure out how we can get these guys open down the field. And, you know, if you're one of these teams that even just runs a lot of play action like the Lions do, and you're running, you know, these crossers and over routes, I don't see why Brock Bowers couldn't have the same impact that Sam Laporta did last year. I would guess they're probably close to similar athletes. I think Brock's probably a little faster. But still, this is kind of the archetype that you're playing in. And just with the recent success we've seen from some of these younger tight ends, I don't think it's crazy to think that Brock could be a guy that you look back and say, oh, he had a Pro Bowl caliber rookie season, partially because he ended up in the right circumstance.
Yeah, I think the right circumstance is the key part of this. I mean, Sam Laporta ends up with Ben Johnson. That's the perfect landing spot for this guy.
Yeah.
And did you see the quote today? Well, you said Twitter's not on your phone. You're a smart man. You took Twitter off your phone, which is great. But there was a quote floating around today where Brad Holmes said that him and Dan Campbell were like the lone wolves on a player in the draft room, and the entire all the whole front office wanted a different guy to, wanted a different guy at the same position, and they were like, no, we want this player. It was not hard to read into it that they were talking about Sam LaPorta. Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell wanted Sam LaPorta, and the whole scouting staff wanted Michael Mayer. It was not like because those guys went back to back. I think that was what it was. That was what a lot of people thought.
Dude,
it was.
It could have been any of their picks. Because it could have been Jameer Gibbs. It could have been Jack Campbell. Like, the Thurs were not top three picks at the time either.
Sure. But it was just the thing about the position that was, and like the fact that Mayer went right after. And, you know, LaPorta over Mayer was not a consensus opinion last year. But again, that just shows like,
no,
front office, coaching staff has like a clear vision for this player. I do think that Brock Bowers like is definitely like needs that to happen as well, which the landing spot I'll throw out here, that's not going to excite you from a quarterback position, but might excite you from a deployment perspective. I do think Sean Payton getting Brock Bowers at the 12th overall pick would be would be pretty interesting. Like, look, do I want to see your boy Brock Bowers catching passes from Jarrett Stidham? No, I don't. But do I want to see how Sean Payton like lines up Brock Bowers? And like, they have a huge target vacuum beyond Cortland Sutton, who isn't happy with his contract right now. So, you know, maybe they get Brock Bowers at 12. They mortgage their future to come back up in the first round for Bo Nix, and like Bo Nix is throwing him little pop gun passes. I can see that.
I mean, I would like that as someone who had part of their youth ruined by Sean Payton via South Falcon Saints rivalry. But man, I think that makes sense for the Broncos just from like the standpoint of like, oh, we're so bad, we probably just need to just draft good players.
Yeah, we just need players, man. Mm-hmm.
Can't overthink it too much. Man, the idea that they would trade back into the first round after trading two picks for Russ and another two picks for Sean Payton. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, but this is what happens when you give the head coach the personnel control, is that they don't give a shit about like the future. They're just like, I need, future draft picks. Who cares? Oh,
need Bo Nix.
Oh, yeah. I need a quarterback. Okay. And like Bo Nix fits my offense. So I don't care. Oh, this isn't going to work out. I'll just retire again and go back to TV just like I did last time. Sean Payton doesn't care.
No, no. I think that would make a lot of sense. You know, it's kind of interesting just looking at where some of these guys could fall. And I know that it's not like very realistic for someone to fall this far, but even if you could get if the Panthers could get their hands on someone like Brock Bowers with some of the pieces that they've got, if he starts to slide, maybe you move up. He's just kind of like a one size fits all in terms of like your pass game coordination. If you have a hole in offense with like a tight end who can move and catch and someone who can flex outside, I think he's someone that can really, really change your offense. But if he starts to fall, man, just due to like positional value and people being confused, if I needed someone and I have a target vacuum, I would go get it. I would go get it because I really do think he's someone that just opens up so much for your offense, and like his presence makes life easier for other people because he can do a lot of the dirty work in the passing game. I know, you know, Georgia did give him a lot of opportunities. I remember when we were talking about Ladd McConkey last week or the week before, you know, people know about how hard Ladd's job was at times because Brock got some of the easy stuff in terms of the sweeps, the screens, some of the RPO stuff. But that goes to speak about how good Brock Bowers is. You know, we're talking about Ladd McConkey as a potential first round pick. And Georgia was like the other guy who we're going to give the ball to more. You know, Adonai Mitchell is going to be a first round pick potentially. Georgia said, no, we're going to keep throwing it to Brock Bowers. James Cook was a second round pick. Georgia said, we're going to give some of your carries to Brock Bowers. Like, this is how good Brock is. And I think he's like a real deal rookie of the year candidate if he lands in the right spot. I mean, shoot, didn't LaPorta just win offensive rookie? No, Stroud definitely won offensive rookie.
Yeah, as long as LaPorta had a quarterback.
Right. But LaPorta had one of the seasons where you're in consideration. So I think the blueprint's kind of been written for Brock on, again, you know, this time next week or, you know, next week's evening when the draft kicks off, that's who I think is really going to be one of the major players of the draft, because I wouldn't be surprised if he went anywhere from 5 to like 15. And I think his draft stock is pretty fluid just because of the way that he plays.
Yeah, if he falls past 18 at Cincinnati, like then like a crime has been committed against like football.
Someone's got to go get up.
Somebody's got to go. Yeah, somebody's got to go get him. All right. We basically did just talk about Brock Bowers for almost 30 minutes. I was not joking, yeah. But I mean, he deserves it because he is that type of prospect. He is awesome. But let's talk about some other tight ends in this class. And really my question to you is like, does anyone else really matter here? Here's a few other names I've heard some hype over. Jatavion Sanders from Texas, who I've seen a decent bit of Jatavion just because I've studied. Charles is shaking his head for the YouTube folks. They see it for the podcast folks, not seeing Charles just shake his head. Jatavion Sanders from Texas, who I've seen a good bit of because I've watched a lot of Texas offense. Theo Johnson, who's a classic Penn Stater, no production, not really a big resume, but a freak show athlete. And then I've seen some like late hype for Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State. So tell me, Charles, about the rest of this tight end class.
Sanders is someone that I almost felt biased like when I started watching this tape, because you know there's like this lull in draft season, like right before the combine, where people are just starting to dig into the tape of guys, and you know I saw people posting like, oh, could Jadavion Sanders be better than Brock Bowers? And I was like, there's no way.
Just go
like,
outside.
There's no way. Stop like, I got to check this guy out. And no, he's not. And then, you know, he kind of hurt himself at the combine by running a good deal slower than I think people thought he did. So I'm not really sure about his draft prospects. I think after the combine and his style of play, they don't really mesh. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes like late day two or even early round three. Ben Sinnott from Kansas State is pretty interesting. Hmm. Yeah, there's like this group of not Brock Bowers tight ends in this class that are still pretty good athletes and can be guys that like do damage with the ball in their hands. And you know, Ben Sinnott's a guy who tested pretty well. I think his game is pretty well rounded as more, you know, at times more of a classic tight end where you're going to get some blocking value. You're going to get some receiving value, but it's not like dynamic in the same way that Brock Bowers is. And another guy that's not one of these three, but I think has a pretty good chance to be a top 100 pick is Jared Wiley from TCU. He's okay. Like a 6'6", 255-pound tight end that almost hit a 4.5 in the 40-yard dash. And to be fair, like to be clear, I didn't watch any TCU during the season, except for that first game they had against Colorado. So I wasn't too familiar with him until the combine happened. Then I went back and watched. And like, yeah, there's some like goofy Big 12 defense stuff going on there where, oh, you know, you're going to see the handful of times a game that no one's just going to cover you. But I think in terms of like just developmental prospects and someone who can be kind of a weapon early on, maybe in more manufactured ways where you can get like use of their athleticism, I think Jared Wiley fits. Not to say that he would do this, but I could see, or not to say that he would turn out to be this player, but I could see someone like Jared Wiley having a rookie year impact like George Kittle, where, okay, the full route tree might not be here yet, but if we can get you open and kind of get you in a spot where you can catch on the run and make use of that size, make use of that speed, you can kind of be a weapon. And even, you know, even guys who didn't really pan out, like Austin Hooper, he had the same kind of impact his first year with the Falcons, where he was just kind of like this third option that they used to punish defenses when they were, you know, looking a little bit too hard at Julio and Sanu. So, yeah, it like I said, it's not, none of these guys are Brock Bowers in terms of just the overall complete game wow factor, but Sinnott and Wiley are two guys that I would probably circle as like the next group of guys who could have pretty productive careers.
This is the thing with tight ends, is just like sometimes it's who's the freak. Okay, are you a big enough are you a freak show athlete, and can you get developed? Yeah. and at some point it will happen. If I was a better host, I would have actually watched this guy, put him on the dock and like actually charted him out to have a stance here, because I think it is critical to like what reception perception would say about this. I will try to get something done on this player before the draft, because I finally relented on this, because enough people are saying like, stop talking about moving Johnny Wilson to tight end. He is a wide receiver. Like, I know Josh Norris is like beating that drum hard over there, almost as hard as he's beating the Brock Bowers no combine testing is a big red flag, which Josh, I mean, yeah. Brother, I love you, Josh, but you should. fair enough take. Like, I get his point, but he's been told all week that Twitter doesn't like he doesn't watch the games. He needs to watch the film and like Josh. Watches.
I know that's the best part, though. You know, they'll be like, Josh, have you ever seen Brock Bowers play? Yeah. Yeah, he has. Of course, yes.
It's like, I understand.
It's his job.
It's his job. Like, look at his YouTube channel. It's just like videos on videos of film. Like, that's Josh's whole thing. Josh has been on draft Twitter longer than some of these people that are complaining at him have probably been alive. It's wild stuff. Yeah. But yeah, just.
Can I give you one more tight end?
Yes. But first, I want you to answer the Johnny Wilson thing. Like, what do we think this guy is? Is he a tight end or is he like a. Is he Devin Funchess, who eventually moved to tight end like 10 years into his career?
I mean, he might be Devin Funchess, but you got to give him a chance to be a receiver first. Sometimes when I see people say stuff like this, like, oh, we'll move a safety down to linebacker. We'll move a wide receiver to tight end. This isn't Madden.
Yeah.
You know,
it isn't like in Madden where the 78 overall, like 3-4 outside linebacker that never got picked up in free agency. You just go in there and you move into D end, and oh, now he's a 98 overall because the traits.
Right,
it's
right.
Not like that, yeah. And by the way, if you didn't do that in your Madden free agency franchise back in like 2008, you were not trying. Okay, like compete, try to win.
Don't trust you at all. The biggest move was signing free agents and then immediately trading them for draft picks. That was another classic move. but dude, with Johnny Wilson and the wide receiver to tight end conversion, dude, you have to block NFL defensive linemen and linebackers. He's never done that. It's really difficult to do. Like, we just talked about how Brock Bowers is not great at that, and he has practiced at that, and he literally has practiced blocking NFL defensive linemen and linebackers every day at Georgia's practice. You know, he practiced against that defense that had 7 first round picks on it, or 5 first round picks, whatever it was. But still, like, man, it's so crazy to me that people think that, you know, you can just do that. Cause okay, Johnny Wilson, you're going to go from wide receiver to tight end. You're going to learn how to play with your hand in the dirt. You're going to learn run blocking from a 3-point stance. You're gonna learn pass blocking. You're gonna learn running tight end routes and how those interact with the wide receiver routes that you used to run. It's so much. And then you're talking about, okay, what's the realistic impact that Johnny Wilson could have at tight end year one? Like none?
Zero.
Almost?
Yeah.
Zero?
The ideal scenario is Darren Waller, and that was years into his career that Darren Waller became Darren Waller with the Raiders.
Right. So just imagine. You know, I think people get upset where sometimes you have a play where, you know, a tight end's blocking defensive end, and sometimes a defensive end will get a sack on those plays. But, oh, well, why did you have a tight end blocking defensive end? Well, because sometimes that's just how the play has to play out.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to hold up. And you're going to get beat sometimes, but no one remembers the plays where it works out, which is honestly most of the time.
Yeah, like 80%.
Where it works out, where a tight end's block, 80% of the time it works out. Just based on pressure percentages, based on sack percentages, most of the time you're not going to notice because it usually turns out fine. But it probably wouldn't if you had never blocked the defensive lineman before. You know, Johnny Wilson, he's not getting 3-point stance and kicking back and pass blocking ever. So to think that he could just do that at the NFL level, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. I think you got to let him try wide receiver first. If you can't do it, you know, 5-6 years into his career, you make the change and put him at tight end. But for now, I don't think it helps him at all to try and just be an NFL tight end after being a college wide receiver for so long.
Yeah, especially like at Florida State. I have not charted Johnny Wilson, probably because like there is the tight end conversion talk, and you know I have like major PTSD from the Kyle Pitts thing, because so many people want me to chart tight ends, and I'm like, bro, I got enough work to do. So like, I have not really done any work on Johnny Wilson, but like watching Florida State, he's out there as like the X, like he's way attached from the formation, like he's not doing any tight endy type stuff. Okay, like he's out in the boundary. That's his role. So, and he's also an older, like, I think he's an older rookie too. So there's just a lot of like
he's an older player.
There's just like a lot of questions here, and yeah, I think it's. I probably will try to get like three games or something charted of him just to see like what he looks like as a receiver, because I'm with you that if he's going to be like a tight end, if he's going to be a tight end, don't even think about him in like your rookie draft. Okay. In your dynasty rookie draft, because he will not do, you will drop him so hard after he does like nothing his rookie year, because he can't block. He can't even remotely set the edge. So like maybe if we're all still alive in 2029, maybe Johnny Wilson has a nice season.
That's a stretch,
but maybe if Planet Earth is still holding up in 2029, Johnny Wilson can have his breakout season as a tight end. You said you had one more tight end prospect you wanted to hit on.
I was about to say, I just finished the Fallout show, and it's like, you know, I turn on the news sometimes, like, I don't know how far away we are from this.
I gotta watch that.
It's pretty good. But the last one I wanted to do is Cade Stover from Ohio State.
Okay.
I don't know if he's a name that a lot of people know, but you know, Ohio State, I think he was a fifth year senior at Ohio State, and they've had kind of an interesting offense as far as college goes, because they have had no need at all to throw to any tight ends for like 5 years. But this year, you know, some of the NFL talent dissipated. You know, you're looking at Marvin Harrison Jr., you're looking at Emeka Egbuga, but for that third spot has usually been held down by another NFL caliber wide receiver, whether it's Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, you know, some of these other guys that they've put into the NFL. So now this year, Cade Stover, in his last year of college football, was, you know, I guess over the last 2 years, has kind of been able to start making a name for himself, even though he's been playing on Ohio State's offense, like getting reps for several years now without actually being able to catch the ball, because, hey, I think Cade Stover's a nice player. He's not Garrett Wilson. He's not Chris Olave. He's not Marvin Harrison Jr. So the repetitions haven't really been there for him until this year, when he put up like a career high 500 yards. But I think he's just kind of like your everyman tight end. Not super flashy, not special, but you look up and you're like, man, he made a couple of key plays for us that that helped us get across the finish line. So I'm kind of in on Cade Stover. Is like, if you miss out on Bowers, if you miss out on some of the other guys we talk about, and you're looking there like round four or five, and you say we could use some depth at tight end, I think Cade Stover is a guy that people should watch.
Not to just do a name comparison, but it feels a little bit like Kate Otten, right? In with the Bucks. Like, yeah, he's never never one of their most important players, but like every now and again he pops up for like a couple plays here and there, right? Like he's never gonna compete with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and all these guys, but like, oh, every now and again, like, yeah, Kate Otten. Especially during the Brady era, obviously that was a little more critical, that tight end position there. But all right, that was good stuff. Some tight ends to keep an eye on beyond Brock Bowers. We're gonna take a quick break. We come back, we're gonna run through the top offensive line prospects from this class right after this. All right, we're back. We are talking offensive line now. If you are a fantasy football dork, do not turn off the show, okay? Number one, because I got to keep the lights on here, okay? So don't turn off the show, number one. Leave a five-star review for the show, for God's sakes. I really need to keep the lights on. In this business, Charles, it's all about like, do the bosses like you? Okay. You know what the boss is like? Numbers, data, five-star reviews. So leave five-star reviews for the podcast that's about to talk about offensive line prospects, because it does matter. Okay. These guys are not scoring your precious little fantasy points. I get that, but they're going to help the offensive ecosystem be better. If the offensive ecosystem is better, production will follow and all of your selfish fantasy needs will be fulfilled. So this stuff is important. So basically how we're going to do this conversation here, Charles, is where you mentioned Nate Tice earlier. He's our colleague. His takes are our takes. It counts. We're just going to go through his top 10 offensive line prospects from his big board and his positional rankings here. We're starting off with Olu Fashanu, offensive tackle out of Penn State. And Nate is kind of a little bit out of left field here, because Joe Alt is kind of, at least from what I've seen, the consensus offensive tackle one across most mock drafts in the industry. But the general consensus opinion with Fashanu is he was a higher tier prospect coming into 2023 than he is leaving the season. But my question to you, Charles, is like, how much of this drop is mostly due to just injuries last year?
I think like all of it. This to me, I think there are some guys in this class who have gotten hit with prospect fatigue. Like, you know, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison to a degree, I would put Olufashanu in that tier.
Interesting.
Because, you know, last year, I remember last year I was talking to a scout when Olufashanu decided to go back to Penn State because he could have come out of the draft last year and probably been a top 3 or 4 pick. And, you know, he was like, man, why the hell would you go back with all this money on the line? You know, you could hurt yourself. You could get dinged up. You could fall down the draft board. That's kind of exactly what happened to him. but there are still games when he's healthy this year where he looks like the guy that people were excited about this time last year. And I would say the prospect fatigue is kind of like, okay, well, we know he's good, but he hasn't been quite as dominant. And we're gonna knock him down a few slots. The Ohio State game is a little rough for him, but even then you can see he's being hampered by something. So
yeah.
I would say if you're someone who likes to watch offensive line tape, I love it. It's like one of my favorite things still, only because I have enough domain knowledge as a former player and coach that can kind of let me cut some corners there.
Sure.
Watch the Iowa game, Penn State, Iowa. And I think you'll see why he has, like Nate has him as the number one tackle in the class. And I think he's still going to have an impact as a rookie pretty early. To be clear, this tackle class is really strong. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could go wrong with any of like the top like 7 guys we're going to talk about today. Crazy. But for Shanu, he's a pretty sure bet, I think, if he's healthy. To be one of those guys where you draft him, you put him at offensive line, and then you don't remember that he's there for like 10 years.
Yeah, to your point about how strong this offensive line class is, Nate has Olufashanu as his 6th overall prospect in the class, and then that's followed by Joe Alt, Malik Nabers, J.C. Latham, and Troy Fotanu. Like, I mean, and then Amarius Mims at 11, and Graham Barton at 12. Like, it's just, it's just so many good linemen in this class. Like, the receiver class is really strong, and I actually think the tackle class is even better. And that some of that is,
I think it's better.
Some of that is just because, look, like there's 5 starting offensive linemen at a time, so there's more bulk of the position. But maybe on day, and that's where I think a lot of teams, the Chargers are a really good example where they've been like the most popular example where this conversation has happened, is do we weigh like, you know what, we could take Marvin Harrison Jr., we could take Joe Alt, and, you know, Nate has Olufashanu ranked higher, but still, like, we could take a top tier offensive line prospect, because let me tell you what, buddy, we get back around the 2nd round, 3rd round, they're not gonna be guys like this available at the offensive line position. It's very good at the top of the draft, but it just, like, that's not how the position works. There's not that strength on day 2 typically, but there is at wide receiver. So that's where, like, that debate is going to come down at this position. But anyways, yeah, I think Olufashanu is the type of guy that you're going to take him and like plop him in as your left tackle. And if he hits, you're just never going to think about it again. Right. You're going to just starting tackle out there as a pass blocker, especially. So any of these teams that, you know, just in that, like, shoot, if you're Chicago, man, and like, I know Braxton Jones is a good player. Like, he's an acceptable left tackle, but like, why wouldn't you just want to drop one of these stud tackles in there? You know, like, I mean, obviously Tennessee at 7 is a very popular tackle pick, but there's just a lot of teams that, you know, a lot of teams need tackles. Everybody needs an offensive lineman. Fashanu is a pass blocker, feels like he could be a really good fit for a lot of these dropback teams.
Yeah. And I mean, even as a run blocker, when he's healthy, I think he looks pretty good there too. He's like 330 pounds and really light on his feet. It's a, you know, I think he's a guy that's just going to prove so many people wrong when this draft season's over and be like, man, maybe we should not have the memory of goldfish and kind of remember what guys look like when they're healthy. Because when he's healthy, he was talked about as a top 5 pick in last year's class. So that guy is still there, still a really good player. And, you know, I think with him and Alt, I think it's a true, like, it's not a 1A, it's not a 1B. It's a true, these guys, to me, best tackles in the class. Probably the safest picks long term, and you know you get so much better. I think Jim Harbaugh put it perfectly at the owners' meetings, where he was like, "This is the positioning group that every other group on the team on offense relies on."
Yep.
And the offensive linemen, they have to be good by themselves, or else the offense does not work. How many offenses have we seen with fantastic skill talent that don't have the offensive line help? And you can't do what you want. You can still have a quality season. You can still make the playoffs. But when it gets tough, you need your fat guys to beat up the other fat guys. It's the ethos of the sport. And this is a really good year for fat guys.
yeah, I mean, the the non-Jim Harbaugh Chargers are a great example of, like, you have pass protection issues, the whole thing starts to kind of fall apart. So understandable why they might want to go one of these high quality tackle prospects high in the draft. Let's talk about the next guy up there, Joe Alt. His dad played in the NFL. Was a great player in the NFL. He actually has not been like a tackle forever. He has a tight end background as Joe Alt. And like, you see that reflected in his game, like the movement skills, the length, the athleticism. Oh, yeah. He's freaking huge. He just is another guy. It feels like everybody mocks him to the Titans. We talked about that with this with Daniel Jeremiah on the most recent Mock Draft Monday. And like, it just makes sense, right? Like, hey, we need a left tackle. You throw this guy in there and you never think twice about it.
Yeah, he's about as clean as they come as prospects do for especially for the offensive line. You can see, like, physically that he used to play tight end, even though he carries his weight well. I mean, all these guys do. It's ridiculous how big these guys are now. Yeah. You know, even Joe Alt, he's 320 pounds and he looks like he's like 290. It's pretty crazy.
He's like 6'8", 6'9", right? I mean,
yeah, he's about 6'8". I think his dad was about 6'8" too. So, you know, 6'8", 320 pounds. He ran sub 5 seconds, where, you know, if you're not as familiar with the thresholds of what makes a good time for an offensive lineman, if you're under 5 seconds in the 40-yard dash, like, you're moving, especially at that size. So he, you know, and really, I think all these guys hit around 5 or sub 5 in the 40-yard dash. So it's a really athletic group of offensive linemen, and Alt, he's just the next piece. Pass blocking, fundamentally sound, run blocking. He's got the athleticism, do some crazy things. It's just, it's easy to see why he is the consensus offensive tackle one, even if Nate doesn't have him in the same sphere.
Next guy up here, JC Latham, offensive tackle out of Alabama. He is, talk about huge. He's a big, big, big player. And Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, who his dad was an offensive line coach in the league for a long, long time, he has him ranked as the top offensive tackle prospect. Again, I think a lot of this is just preference and what you like out of your tackle, because you really can't go wrong seemingly with any of these guys. But JC Latham, talk to me about his game.
Okay, you guys, like, you remember when, like, when Nick Saban first got to Alabama, and it was just all these gigantic offensive linemen, like Andre Smith, Chance Warmack, a couple other guys they put in the NFL, the Quandro brothers. Latham's kind of closer to that. I don't know if he's maybe the most fluid pass protector in the world, but you don't have to be when you're the biggest and strongest player on the field. Like, there's, and to be clear, I don't think he's a slouch in pass protection at all. I'm sure. Just like talking, but in comparison to like someone like Joe Alt, he might not be quite there, but you know, when you're 6'6", you know, 6'5", 340 pounds, it could move a little bit. All you have to do really is just get your hands on someone and it's over. You can create enough time usually to allow the quarterback to get a pass off. And in the run game, people mover.
Yeah.
Joe, the SEC title game this year against Georgia, he's blowing guys up, moving guys out the way. And again, you know, we talk about it with Brock Bowers, like, those are future NFL players that he's doing it against. So I think he's a pretty special player. And it speaks to the depth of this class that someone like this is in contention for OT3. And, you know, even you can make an argument that some guys below the list are better than him, because he's firmly like someone that you should draft in the top 12 of any draft class. And he might get pushed down the board because there are so many guys this year.
How is this guy not a Raider at pick 13? Okay. You talk about, like, people
probably because they get scared by Alex Leatherwood. That's probably maybe the only reason why.
Yeah.
History on Nick Saban tackles is not great.
True. Yeah. I mean, the Leatherwood thing, you're right. Like, dude, that wasn't he, was he cut by like the end of his second season or?
Yeah, or maybe even like before. It was sometime during the second season the Raiders let him loose, and he never really turned up anywhere after that. Evan Neal has not been good for the Giants.
Nope.
They've had some other guys, like Andre Smith, the guy who I mentioned before. He ended up playing for a long time, but was never lived up to like that 6th overall pick. So it's a little dicey. But you know, I always struggle with like how much is that the player and how much of it is the environment that they come from. Cause you know, for a while it was don't ever draft an Ohio State quarterback. Look at what CJ Stroud just did last year.
Also, dude, Bama corners was another thing. Like those guys, because, you know, they play a lot of like off man and stuff and like whatever. And then we've got two Bama corners that are consensus first round picks this year. So like it just, I mean, they haven't played, obviously. But yeah, the CJ Stroud Ohio State quarterback thing is, USC receivers, dude, I can't tell you how many times it was like a bit at the old NFL Network days where, USC receivers, because there's just so many USC people that went there, like, yep, USC receivers, am I right? Like, they all stink. And then like Robert Woods ended up being good with the Rams, Juju was good with the Steelers, like Amon-Ra St. Brown is good in the league, Drake London is really good. So like it just, these things happen, and sometimes it's just sometimes honestly I think it's just random.
Yeah, it's pretty random. But JC Latham, I wouldn't let the past Bama failure scare me on that one. I think he's a really good player and should be good for a long time.
Yeah, I just think, just again, the Raiders at pick 13, you said people mover, and I thought like Antonio Pierce wants himself a people mover. So that would have to be the owner calls down and is like, yeah, we're not doing that. We just did that. But okay. Next one up here, Troy Fautanu. To me, when I watch Washington's offense, I see him, I highlight him. He just plays like a pro, man. Like, he just looks like a professional offensive tackle, but there is some thought of like maybe he moves into guard. What spot do you see him playing in the league?
I think you start him off at tackle, move to guard if it's not working. I think he's got the athleticism, but you know, I know some people get scared off by like arm length and dimensions, and he's not like your prototypical size. Like when we talk about Fashanu, all Latham, we'll get to Amarius Mims in a second. He's not anywhere near as big as those guys, but he's still got the movement skills and I think the versatility to be kind of a plug and play. If you need a tackle, that could work. If you need a guard, he should be really, really good.
Yeah. Just kind of think of a landing spot for him. I just think, you know, Seattle makes
sense. We have him as the Jets.
Jets? I mean, yeah, because like
we have him in the Jets in our latest mock draft.
Yeah. They just need offensive line depth, really, but like, I know fans will be pissed. It's like, oh, he's not gonna start, but like he might end up starting, buddy. You never know.
He might. he look, Tyron Smith is not he's healthy all games. That often. Yeah, for sure. Morgan Moses, you know, I think a world where like Morgan Moses, your swing tackle, is pretty good.
Yeah,
and after last year, I don't think any Jets fan can complain about having offensive line depth. Because last year got really bad for them.
All right, next guy up here, you mentioned him, Amarius Mims out of Georgia. I mean, total freak show, but like, is he a project because there's not that like level of experience there?
No, I don't think he's a project in terms of the skill.
Okay.
Because when I watch the tape, I there's some times where I'm watching him play, I'm like, why is this not the first pick in the draft? I don't know. he's really special. And you look at the builds. Guys who are like 6'8", 340, 350 pounds are not supposed to be built the way he's built, like a tight end.
Yeah, he
it's kind of crazy.
He has such a like tiny waist. Honestly, some like, which I feel so weird saying that, but like it just is what it is. Like when I'm charting like Georgia receivers, Ladd McConkey and these other guys, they're sometimes like, you know, because I'm charting, like, are they on the ball? Are they off the ball? And, like, usually the first thing is, like, all right, is there a tight end? Are they on the same side of the field as a tight end? I'm like, oh, no, that's not a tight end. That's a freaking tackle. That's Amarius Mims.
Yeah.
That shouldn't look like that.
Yeah. The only pause, like, for concern that I have is some of the injury stuff this year. And just overall, he hasn't played all that much for Georgia. Over the past 2 years combined, he played less than 700 snaps. So that's like not even a full season's worth of playing time. And you're just looking at like a per game standpoint, but the talent is just through the roof. And if he can stay healthy and actually get through a full season and show the stamina that he can get through a full season, I think he could be a superstar at offensive line.
Yeah, it seems like at some point in the process, he was kind of a late first round pick. Now I doubt that. I feel like he ends up going much higher than people think. Let's talk, maybe even the Rams, by the way, pick 19. They, you know, they could use a guy like to develop really at that tackle position. All right, number six, offensive line prospect, Graham Barton out of Duke. Seems like maybe the most versatile package of the bunch. I know Nate is high on his ability to potentially play all five positions. So, Graham Barton, what do you think ends up happening with him?
I would put him, for me personally, I would probably put him over Fautanu but okay. it's the same kind of deal where you're like, okay, he could play left tackle. He's got the athleticism too, but not the prototypical size. So now you're talking about, okay, left guard, right tackle. And to Nate's point, I think he could play center too. So he's a really, really high floor player. And even if you go look at some of his matchups against some of the guys who are touted as draft prospects in this class, he usually holds his own. And, you know, the Duke film is kind of funny because even though Duke had a good team, it's still very apparent when an NFL prospect is on Duke's team and how they pop out. And I think that Graham Barton is kind of one of those guys.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up and just like what, like both from a landing spot perspective and a position perspective. Number 7, Talese Fuaga from Oregon State. Another guy that maybe could slide inside to guard, maybe could be a tackle, but he just like is a tone setter in the run game, really. So many teams, I feel like, in the back half of the first round that want to run the ball. Like I look at the Steelers. I even look at like the Eagles, the Cowboys, like these teams that want to maybe beef up their run game. He seems like a perfect prospect there.
Yeah, he was talked about earlier in the prospect process as like a top 10 pick, which kind of maybe appears to be smoke as we get a little closer to the draft. But still, firm first round prospects. The movement skills are pretty special for someone his size. I don't think he's like quite as clean with his technique as, you know, I think he's still good because this is a really great offensive tackle class.
Right.
But, you know, we are comparing him to a Amarius Mims or Joe Alt or Fashanu. I think he's a little step below. But still, he kind of reminds me of, we've talked a lot about the Harbaughs and, you know, the Chargers and Grant Roman. He kind of reminds me of Mike Yopouti of the old 49ers, where, you know, just this huge road grading. It's great throwback, right?
Yeah.
This is huge road grading offensive lineman that you probably don't want to play tackle all too much in the NFL, but as a guard, kick ass.
Yeah. Again, I can just see so many teams like the Steelers just come to mind. The 20th overall pick, the Steelers. Even if he ends up playing at tackle a little bit, I don't know. That one just makes a lot of sense to me. Next one up here, number 8, Kingsley Suamatatia. Did I get that right? BYU. Offensive tackle.
I thought it was Suamataya.
Cool. Nate admits in his write-up of him that he will likely be kind of ahead of consensus on this player. He said, quote, "The best football is ahead of him. He's just 21 years old. He was a 5-star recruit." Do you agree with Nate on this one?
Yeah. You know, he's also the cousin of Lions offensive tackle, Penei Sewell. So
bloodlines, baby.
Football run. Bloodlines, baby. he's a monster. And I don't really know how else to put this, but he's just kind of a prick on the field. Like, he's the guy that's going to go the extra mile to kind of see how much force he can inflict on his opponent. It's not always clean. He's got some technique issues to clean up, but I mean, he's 21 with a huge frame, great athleticism. When you're talking about like the end of the first round or even early second round, he's the kind of prospect that an offensive line coach looks at and goes, "Oh, I can fix him.
I can fix him.
I can fix him." Yeah.
There's so many teams that could trade back up into the first round too. Like, I keep coming back to Washington as a team with extra draft capital that's going to get a quarterback early on. And like, that offensive line is not the type of, like, they have the pass catchers, but they don't have the offensive line that you really want paired with a young quarterback. Like, maybe he could be a guy that they move back up in the first round for. And just, again, you get that kind of like, yeah, kick ass. Like I can fix him thing. I don't know who their offensive line coach is there in Washington, but, It's not a former Panthers guy because Ron Rivera no longer works for the team. So there we go. All right. Number 9 prospect here, Jordan Morgan, another offensive tackle, potential offensive guard out of Arizona. My notes for him was just like the movement skills, really. Again, stand out with a player like him. I could see him being a fit like with the Detroit Lions. You know, I mean, just they have a good offensive line, but if they wanted to add another piece there, a team that really wants to use zone concepts and really get out on the edge, that's the type of thing I could see Jordan Morgan doing.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me. I think he could play some guard, but the way that I think of him, he kind of reminds me of like a classic pass protecting tackle that someone might say is a little soft. And I don't want to say that anyone is soft, because if you are an offensive lineman that can make it to this point, you are not soft at all. But in terms of like how his game translate, he gets bullied a little bit out there, but he gets, his feet are so good, his legs are so good, that it kind of gives him a high floor to recover. And I think that that could work on the inside. It could work on the outside. And I think, you know, if you're talking about him as a guard, like he's a guy that could really be a weapon on the second level in terms of getting linebackers, getting secondary guys down in the open field. I think he's going to need a little bit of time to get stronger, but the base frame is there for a really good player.
Number 10, Jackson Powers Johnson, center, mostly probably prospect from Oregon. I really enjoyed watching Jackson Powers Johnson when I was watching Oregon's offense, working on Troy Franklin, stuff like that. At the Senior Bowl, he was just kind of throwing himself around. Nate's note from his write-up of him cracked me up. The first line is, he is built like a strong man from an early 1900s circus. I thought that was so funny because, like, if you watch him at the Senior Bowl, just the barrel chest, like, thing. He looks like how I think I stand, the barrel chest there, Jackson Powers Johnson. I'm trying to be like you, buddy. Anyways, I feel like, but I've heard mixed things on him, right? Because at one point it seemed like, especially after that Senior Bowl like week, that the media was really getting high on him. But then it seemed like, you know, what's come out from, quote, the league or like whatever, that people inside the NFL are not as high on Jackson Powers Johnson. So where do you stand in this divide?
I'm going to be neutral here. I think he's a good player. I think end of round one, like early round two, is probably the right frame for him. He's been mocked to the Cowboys a ton. I mean, they need some center help.
Yeah, they do.
The biggest concern here is probably, like, he's had a ton of concussions in college, which, you know, we've seen guys who have been good and that kind of derails their career. I'm not going to say that that happens to him, but he's a good player. I just think he's not like a transcendent center talent. You know, he's not Alex Mack. He's not quite Travis Frederick, but still, he's a big upgrade over what a lot of teams have, and sometimes that's all you need.
I can see in my mind's eye, like, I know this is not what the fan base wants, maybe because they want a receiver so bad, but you mentioned end of first, early second, like Panthers at 33. Dave Canales, they've beefed up the interior of that line, right? They signed Robert Hunt, they signed Damian Lewis, but like Austin Corbett is currently slated to start at center after they understandably moved on from Bradley Bozeman. You know, maybe they make that transition, Corbett moves into center, whatever, but like just adding another kind of like tough guy in the middle. Like Dave Canales has said, he's going to show you how stubborn he is with the run game. Their offensive coordinator, Brad Idzik, John Idzik's son, who connections, baby, bloodlines. He was talking about just the run game and the running back rotation. It really seems like that's an empty point of emphasis for that team. So like, I could see maybe if he doesn't go in the first round, again, everybody wants receiver there at 33. He could end up just being like the pick there to give Bryce Young a center.
The Panthers, the more I know that pick makes sense, especially because, you know, Bradley Bozeman's out the door. They have a hole at center. They still, even with the signings that they've made, going to get Robert Hunt, going to get Damian Lewis, and trading for Deontay Johnson, a receiver, they still have quite a bit of work to do on offense. But you know what's even worse than their offense right now? Their defense. Like, the Panthers' depth chart on defense, Derrick Brown is much braver than me, because I would have been holding out as long as I possibly could. You're going to have to Kirk Cousins me before I sign a long-term deal here. Just based on the surrounding talent. So I think center makes a lot of sense from a structural standpoint as like the final piece to kind of solidify the offensive line. And maybe that's more important than going to get an impact player on defense. But you know, so when we do our mock drafts, we have a section at the bottom for teams without a first round pick, because people were crying for a mock draft.
How nice.
We had the 49ers trade out of the first round, and people are like, oh, well, I want to see the 49ers pick. I'm like, okay, fine. We'll start doing that for you. So the first pick is going to be the Panthers at 33. And I end up giving them like a defensive player because I looked at their depth chart on our lads and I'm like, holy crap, who are these guys?
Yeah.
And I feel like if I'm saying that and I look at this stuff all the time, maybe they should draft a defensive player. But there's also, you know, I do think there's some credence to the idea of like, okay, we've seen, I don't want to say a lot of shorter quarterbacks because there haven't been a whole lot of short quarterbacks in general, but the one shining example that we all go back to is Drew Brees with the Saints and how good the interior of that line was. That's probably center is probably the final piece. And shoot, if Icky turns back into like the back half of rookie year Icky instead of, you know, what he's been for most of his career, then that could actually be a pretty decent offensive line. But they're still working. They're still churning and putting the pieces together.
Yeah, nobody cares what I think, but like if I was running the Panthers, I would just say forget it about the defense this year. You know, they signed a bunch of dudes that like Giro Evero knows. You know, Josie Jewell coached him before. Jordan Fuller's there's experience there. A'shaun Robinson. It's like just guys that have been in this system. I would just say like, hey, Evero, you want to be a head coach? You stuck around this year. Like, go make that defense the 20th of these group of guys. Like, go make that the 20th best defense in the league, and like that'll be a good thing for your resume. We've got to just beef up the offense. Like, we're just not going to care about the fact that our defense has no players. Just beef up the offense and like get that functional and get to a point where you're not relying on Austin Corbett changing positions or, you know, Tommy Tremble is their starting tight end. That's a bad roster. That's a bad team.
Dude, it's so bad.
Let's move on here. Final player I wanted to ask you about. He is not in Nate's top 10, so we're calling this an honorable mention. I did just want to get your thoughts on Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma because Pete Traeger, who we talked about the mock draft on the previous episode with Jordan Vanek when we were talking about the Rams, he had him mocked 19th overall to the LA Rams, just and saying like, I guarantee this pick is going to be an offensive player if they don't like trade out of the first round, basically. So Tyler Guyton, a kind of honorable mention here. What do we think?
He's like the ultimate I can fix him a prospect of these guys. All the tools in the world to be a rock star, dynamite left tackle. I just think the consistency is not always there with him. The technique's always there with them. Not always there with him. But, dude, talking about almost six. Another guy, gigantic, 6'8", 320 pounds, jumped out the roof, ran well, had good agility times. Someone's going to take a chance on that in the first round. I wouldn't even be surprised if it's like in the top 20 because he's young, he's got the freak tools, and there's clearly – I think there's a pretty clear path for him to become a much better player than he is right now, which is why he's of all these guys that we just talked about, he's like the ultimate I can fix him prospect. Where an offensive line coach is going to look at him and say, I can't teach being 6'8", 320, be able to move like that, but I might be able to teach you how to use your hands a little better, how to get into a pass set. And if we can combine those together, we've got something that we can count on for, you know, 8+ years.
Well, there we go. That is the top of a very, very good offensive tackle, offensive line prospect as a whole. This is a great group. Super excited to see where these teams end up picking these players. And Charles, that's the end of our prospect preview series, buddy. I appreciate you coming on and breaking down all these positions. I feel super prepared. I'm sure the listener feels super prepared for the NFL draft. Next time I talk to you on the show, man, it's going to be after night one of the NFL draft.
Yeah. Yeah, we're so close.
We're so close, buddy.
Can taste it. Can taste it. But yeah, I'm excited for this class. It's funny, when we do these mock drafts, we keep finding ourselves with the first round just filled with offensive linemen and receivers. And the more you talk about it, why wouldn't it go that way? But I guess since we're so certain that offensive linemen and receivers are going to fill the first round, there's going to be some surprise picks and we will see what happens next week. I'm excited to see where these guys end up, and I'm excited to see who I can give an F to this year that will be hilariously wrong in a year from now.
Well, absolutely can't wait to see who that team ends up being. Just can't wait to do the recap podcast with you pretty much just a little over a week from now, buddy. That's going to be super excited. The first round is electric. Man, what a time to be alive. Draft season is almost over, and the draft is almost upon us. That is going to do it for this show. We are back on Monday of draft week with The Athletic's Dane Brugler for our final installment of Mock Draft Monday. Until then, we're out.